So this is my talk on cache tags, which is a defense against the problem of shoulder surfing. So shoulder surfing is an increasing concern for us in mobile computing. People compute in public, and this risks information exposure on screen. Right now, there aren't any real existing solutions that can handle this outside of securing the process of authentication or against other threat vectors beyond that of the visual. And cache tags is my solution to this, which permits input and sensitive access to data in public. So shoulder surfing, this is what I'm talking about here. Something being able to see your screen, whether directly or indirectly through a camera or a recorded video. These attacks can come in many forms. There's now more than 3 billion cameras that have digital cameras in circulation, and they're becoming more capable, in excess of 40 megapixels now and 10x zoom. Also, we have millions of closed circuit TVs that are cameras that are usually unsecured as well. And certainly no less threateningly, human sight is certainly a threat vector for this. These attacks can also be quite more complex. Criminals have sophisticated tools that can be used to capture data. OCR solutions are becoming increasingly cheap and capable. And as we know, exposure of certain personal information can increase the chance of others through things like social engineering or phishing and stuff like that. So looking at some of the other related work in this area, we have things like physical barriers that certainly can limit at least some aspect of the physical exposure. The 3M privacy filter limits the field of view to only those directly behind you. Something like an Oculus Rift or Google Glass is somewhat of an option for this in that it moves the screen so close to your face that no one can see it behind you. Currently, these technologies still aren't sufficiently general purpose for everyday use, though, for that. We also have things like graphical and gesture-based passwords, which eliminate the ability of an attacker to observe the password itself, but they can still see any gesture that's being drawn on the screen. So as far as that actually goes for protecting even the authentication, I feel, from the shoulder surf threat, it's actually worse than the password option alternative. Also, we have hardware and biometrics. They certainly prevent the ability to have someone look over your screen and see your sensitive data, but that doesn't permit any way of computing with sort of general purpose stuff. You can't have a biometric for your credit card arbitrarily and know that that biometric is different than, say, your social security number. So with this, we basically have this problem with the visual channel remaining open. Any existing solutions don't really handle this general purpose case. So here's cache tags. This is my solution to this. It allows for the commuting of sensitive data in public without worrying about exposure. So we assign aliases for personally identifiable information called cache tags. They're prepended with a dollar sign, like a hashtag. It's valuable. For example, we can do something like $Visa to represent our 16-digit credit card number. And this allows us to not worry about the screen leaks because the data that's on screen will never be showing our sensitive data. So here's sort of an example. The user will configure anything that they want to protect with an alias. So your name goes to $name if you want, or any other combination that you want to do. Then basically you use the cache tag as if it was the sensitive data. You can input it and the system will treat it as if it is the actual data. And if the system would be displaying the sensitive data, it will show the alias in its place. So talk a little bit about the threat model. We're talking about passive observation-based attacks by either direct or indirect human observation. We assume that the attacker can view both the screen and or any sort of input mechanism that they would be using. So the idea of even hiding, even a password mask sort of on a screen would be insufficient if the attacker was actually able to see you typing the password. We also assume that there's not really an active attack in this because an observer isn't really able to influence the user in any way. So a little bit on the design. So and we're talking about interception of sensitive data as it's before it's displayed on screen. We use the simple user interface of the cache tags with an alias representing each sensitive data element. This access to sensitive data in public is allowed. We also handle different data formats. Things like credit card numbers and phone numbers can be in different pairs. They can have different spacing and or hyphenation schemes. So we wanted to be able to detect those and treat them the same. Also, an efficient deployment model that would not require custom firmware. And then per application behavior so that the system could be toggled on and off for specific apps that would be less useful, like, say, games, for instance. So when we first started looking at this project, we started to look at what are kind of the granularities that we could do this in. And on one extreme, we have this, what I'm going to call coarse grain granularity, which in which we can think of masking either an entire screen or a portion of a screen. So if it's blacked out or blurred or something like that. Certainly, this is capable of preventing the leak of someone being able to see it on screen, but it also has the side effect of not being usable. You can't see what's on there. You can't really use it either. So at the other opposite end of the spectrum, we have sort of data tracking, in which case we can identify something that is sensitive, assign it a tag, and then track it as it propagates through the system. This has a tremendous amount of overhead for the accounting to keep track of the data. And then there's sort of this middle ground solution that we found using this keyword-based approach. So we predefine all the data elements, but just essentially do pattern matching on them so that we don't have to pre-identify which specific data it is. We just have to identify that that data was sensitive. And this gives us basically the benefits of the data tracking without any of that high overhead. So looking at where we want to actually intercept this data, here's sort of an overview of where how Android sort of is laid out with the apps and browsers on the top all the way down to the frame buffer at the very bottom. So we actually ended up intercepting inside the application framework. And the reason really basically is because if you go any lower than that, you've lost all the context of sensitive data being sensitive data. It's been converted into an image now. You know, it's part of a bitmap. On the other side, we could move it up, which certainly would work. This would bring it into the domain of applications, and then the burden would be on individual developers then to implement this. So keeping it inside the system in the framework in the widgets, we're able to get this benefit and give it to any apps without needing to change them. So for the user interface or early design, we looked at just using some code words. Essentially, we were trying to make it so that an attacker would believe that they were getting real information. So things like give, you know, something that would appear to be that way, Joe and John or something like that. But we found that was difficult because then you'd have to memorize two complete sets of data. So in addition to knowing your regular 16-digit credit card number, you'd also have to have your dummy credit card and know which one matched to which. And that ended up getting kind of confusing. So we moved on. We looked at using a separate secure entry keyboard app, basically an Android IME. And this proved to be a little awkward to use just because of the difficulty of switching between the sensitive and the unsensitive. It was cumbersome at best. So we looked at then moving into replacing the actual factory keyboards and essentially putting that functionality within there. This did work, but it turns out that the actual removal of the factory keyboard and replacing it is actually a really complicated process because of how the providers that it defines are embedded inside there. So with that difficulty of portability, we decided to go against that and arrived really at the cache tag idea. So we support input of cache tags directly with the prepended alias of the dollar sign. Or direct input of the sensitive data. And it's not complete input of the sensitive data, because if you have the system defined already, and then I have fname for my name, and I type MIC from the Michael, what's going to pop up on the screen, the autocorrect, is going to be fname already, because it's going to notice that it's the Michael, and it's going to switch it anyway. So this does have some potential for a leak, because you could infer maybe because of the first few letters or input, but essentially this still protects against that as well, too. Some other semantics we wanted to support were recursion, so that you could define certain cache tags that could cascade into others, so things like doing email signatures, for example. Also wanted to detect and prevent circular mapping, since if we had a Joe and a John situation that mapped to each other, we would have a Stack Overflow every time that either of them would be entered. Also wanted to look at the different schemes of different account numbers and prefixes and stuff. So we looked into using some just pretty basic regular expression to be able to identify those. Moving on a little bit into the implementation stuff, real quick, here's sort of a breakdown of how a typical simple user input app would look, basically with the text views and the edit text and the buttons and stuff, that how they were broken down. And these are the individual widget views that we intercept with the cache tags and convert them on the fly. We do that using Exposed. If you aren't familiar, Exposed is a code injection framework. It basically allows dynamic manipulation of runtime. You can change code without any loss of portability because it's done dynamically. It allows individual class methods or constructors to be hooked, and code can be executed before, after, or in place of them. This can allow us to do things like change function parameters or change return values, as well as changing access control. So we leverage this to basically intercept widgets. So we intercept static text from Android text views, editables, GL text, and web text using those. So looking at kind of how this works a little bit more, we look at how the view hierarchy is aligned. We see that the text view basically is the parent of everything that gets displayed on screen. So if we make the change there with exposed, we get all of these automatically because of Java inheritance, because a button is a text view. So this is actually a pretty efficient way to do that. So what we're actually changing, so here's sort of an interaction of basic text view and the services that would interact with it, things like spell check, autocorrect, copies and paste, canvases, things like that, running apps. And what we do is we add a separate field, which is the alias text, and maintain that mapping internally within the widget. And then we, as the getText function is called, we intercept that. And depending on the service making the request, we return either the alias or the actual data. The editables work similar, except that we're looking only at the setText in this case because of the way that the edits work. But we change them in the same way, just intercepting the setText as they're done. Moving on to the evaluation, first and foremost, we wanted to make sure that the system actually worked, you know, display and input accuracy. So we came up with an API coverage test where we essentially threw every API that and Android exposes to developers. We made test cases for all of them and ran through them all. Also found a subset of market apps that were representative for this and ran them on that. Did a performance overhead as well as usability. So the display and input, we focus primarily on the text, on just on plain text views and edit text, because all the other ones are them too, basically. So this gives it that. We picked a subset of PII chosen from US government standards. We showed that for each one of the terms, we showed that if the app internally is trying to display it, if the user is inputting the sensitive data directly, and if the user is inputting the cache tag directly, we showed that in any case that it's not, it is not displayed on screen. And we also showed that internally, when the app is using the data, that it's actually using the correct term. So internally, the app will be, you know, sending the data, you know, to upload, you know, to log in or something, will be the actual term, not the alias term, since that wouldn't really make sense. I don't think Amazon would appreciate you trying to buy something with $Visa as your credit card. So here's sort of what this looks like. We have a set of test cases that we run. We do system input of actual data, system input of alias data, as well as user input of actual data and user input of alias data through either the screen keyboard, basically on-screen tapping keyboard, and a physically connected USB keyboard. And what we do is we use Android Debug Bridge to dump the view hierarchy. We take a screenshot of the what's currently on screen and run OCR on that. And then we show that all of them, or we check to see that they're only the alias is shown. So that in any case, no matter what's entered, whether it was the alias entered or the sensitive data entered, it will be only shown the alias. We also do an upload to Google Docs just so that we can remotely verify that it did get changed back. And in that case, we're going to see that only the actual would be shown, since it would, you know, to maintain the usability, this is required. And then repeat for all the tests. So here's all of our test combinations. We used different types of characters, alphanumerics, different cases. We wanted to check to see if whether text sensitivity was going to be an issue. And then 9 common widgets: text views, check text views, buttons, checks boxes, radio buttons, switches, edit text, auto-completes, and multi-auto-completes. Within two different layouts, and then using different themes, and built by a static XML and dynamically generated in Java, using both the traditional older activity-based lifecycle as well as a fragment lifecycle. And we found that for that case, that cache tags successfully was able to handle all of them. But we really wanted to know is, does it work with existing apps? With the millions of apps available on the thousands of different devices, we really can possibly enumerate all of these. So we wanted to choose a representative subset. So we looked at popularity, mostly from download metrics on Google Play Store. And then we filtered those down to apps that could actually contain private information. So we came up with email messaging, social media, storage, office, and finance as sort of the general categories, and we picked the three top apps in each one of those categories. And they also had to have the idea that we can remotely verify the correctness. So the idea is for Facebook, you can see that the post that you made that had the cache tag locally, if you view it on another screen, you can see that the cache tag was converted back into the alias, or actuals, excuse me. So here is that, and we worked almost all the cases. The one that we didn't end up working for was Microsoft Office Mobile, and further investigation showed that this is because the way that the text is displayed in there, presumably to allow for fancy fonts and things like that, doesn't actually descend hierarchically in the Java from edit text. They descended directly from Vue and made it custom themselves. So that's why. This isn't a limitation entirely. Knowing what that Vue actually was called and that function, we could apply the exact same transformations that we make to a standard edit text with that and fix that problem then for that and or any other sort of deviation that would be necessary. I also did a performance evaluation. We ran it with 10 cache tags, which we assume is a pretty appropriate number that a typical user would have. With remote verification, including a round trip, internet, web requests, we see about a 2% increase in app overhead. And without that, we see about a 3%. Almost unnoticeable to the user because these are, in the percentage-wise, these are tenths of seconds. We looked at scalability also with a 50 and 100 cache tags, which we believe to be beyond what anyone would use this for the personal information. And we see that even with 100 entries, we can still be within about 10% overhead, and that the performance degrades linearly as we increase in size. Some of the future work we want to do is increase the coverage, specifically the Office example. Maybe we can find ways to infer this automatically without having to do specific cases for those that don't fit in the standard inheritance model. Also wanted to address a common name issue. So there's this problem that can happen when any of the cache tags are common names. So assume we have a user, John, who has fname assigned as the cache tag, and he goes and browses and searches for John Adams or John Travolta or something. Well, everything on the whole page basically is going to be fname everywhere. So while that might not directly leak the data, certainly that could, it would be pretty easy to infer that this guy is clearly named John. So. Definitely an issue we want to look into. Also want to handle more data formats. Currently, we aren't able to recognize when an input field is split into multiple parts. So like something like a telephone number that has the area code in a box by itself. What we can do currently is by adding each one of those separate terms into the repository and having them have their own aliases. But we'd like to eventually expand this to a notion that the widgets are aware contextually of what's around them and can actually know if two fields are actually connected then. So also want to handle some business cases. We envisioned cache tags initially just to protect personal information, but we found that it generalized to quite a large number of other cases. The recursive expansion allows complex hierarchies to be created. We could also add some very simple modifications to support ranges or queries with wildcards, such that we could mask it in anything that with a certain prefix or anything that matches a certain pattern. If you wanted to, something like an accountant could be able to mask, every credit card number or something like that because it matches a pattern. So that's a feature there too. So to conclude then, cache tags is the first step against visual protection of screen leaks. We show that it is feasible to compute in public without exposing personal data. The system is efficient, maintains full functionality, and near universal compatibility, with the exception of the few that can be still handled, giving us a unified device-wide protection against the shoulder surf threat. And that's all I have. Thank you for your time, and I'll take any questions.
Okay, thank you, Jane.
Great work, Jay Anjo, Microsoft Research. So I have a concern about two cases of false positives. So one is user may sort of accidentally in the body of email, type this cache tag and something, and then it's sort of not knowing that it would automatically convert it to something that is mapped to that cache tag. So one question is how would you prevent that? And the second one is, it may be hard for malware to guess your password, but maybe easier to guess that, this $SSN, if there's a way to generate the event, you will return this sensitive data to any applications. So how would you prevent that?
The answer to the first one, this is actually an issue we ran into, not so much in email bodies, but in URLs, because you can occasionally get a dollar sign in a URL, and well, then you get that expanded, and that didn't really work well. So we were doing specific cases for them, finding what that actual view ID was and just blacklisting it. What was the second question?
Second question is, if application is trying to steal.
Oh, yes, yes.
To write SSN, for instance.
We've looked into ways to prevent that threat, but it's still kind of an issue. It is possible to using the system to make, prompt pre-fill with a bunch of things and get that information out.
Right.
So yes.
Okay, all right, thank you.
Hello, great work. I was curious about a different angle of the same attack. So you may not know what cache tag a user used for their SSN, but you could definitely exhaust that character space in not too much time with white text on a white background. The user would never know. Would the application doing this be able to recognize that the text had been replaced between where it called for it to be drawn on screen and where it actually ended up on screen?
No, it's not aware.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So, did you do some kind of user study in order to see whether this is really usable?
We definitely have considered that, and it's a possible direction we're probably going to go for at least a laboratory-based study, if not a long-term tracking study.
Okay. And then one question I had with the evaluation. So, without doing the remote thing, you had, I think, 3%, and with remote, only 2%. So why is it faster if you...
Because the extra time for the round-trip internet web request amortizes the time a little bit better.
Oh, okay, I see.
Yeah. Okay. Can you talk a little bit about how cache tag is protecting this information on the device or how it's storing it?
Currently, they're stored in an encrypted centralized repository. We realize this probably makes a juicy target for hackers and probably would not be the best way to do this. Probably something like internally having each, it would put the burden on the user, but being able to determine or have the user predefine which apps would have access to which data would be a way to do that.
Okay, then let's thank the speaker.
Yes.